Welcome back to another episode of the Big Asp Cornhole Podcast. Sean and Dan are back with you to chat about our favorite game. What's going on, Dan?
Same old, bro.
All right, just let's not waste any time. Yep. Break down what we're sipping on tonight in a segment we call What You Drinkin'.
What You Drinkin'?
Brought to you by our friends over at Colorado Cornhole Connection. Get yourself some badass boards. Check out iHeartCornhole.com. Use code BigAsp10 to up your board game. Let's go. So tonight, Sean, we're taking it back. I think the most classic Christmas beer of all time from Great Lakes Brewing, the Christmas Ale.
It's the Christmas Ale.
The OG of Christmas Ales, and it's still one of the best around. Hasn't changed in years.
It's weird seeing it out of a can.
Dude, that's exactly why I bought it, because they serve it out of an effing can now, and it's so convenient.
Why not?
7.5%. It's got that.
If you haven't
flavor.
Had this before, dude, I mean, it's a life changer. Because you know, one of my favorite parts about this is I only need to have a couple,
yes,
and I'm already gonna get fucked up.
That's the point of it.
So like, I get like my wife would be like, "How many have you had?" I'm like, I only had like four or five.
Yeah, and for those
why
of
are
you
slurring? Well, just
because
I don't know.
They're strong shit. Yeah. But for those of you not from Cleveland, if you go to any Cleveland bar and order Christmas ale, ask for the cinnamon sugar rim. It's a good, just have
it's
one.
It's a little bougie, I don't know.
It is bougie, but you know what? Treat yourself, all right?
It's like fruit in your drink. It's like fruit in your beer. I don't know. All right, so we have more great cornhole content for you all today. We are going to be reviewing some bags, surprise, surprise. We have three bags by one of our favorites, Bag Daddy.
Heck yeah.
We did a little experiment over the past week, and we wanted to set the record straight and discuss the different ways to break bags in. And then we are going to be joined by the golden voice of cornhole that we all know and love, Mr. Trey Ryder. But before we jump into all that, we bring you what's going on in our cornhole lives in a segment we call In and Around the Hole.
Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Brought to you by Airwolf Athletics, helping athletes become the alpha in all aspects of life. Stop by airwolfathletics.com and check out all their amazing products. Become the alpha and join the pack today. Visit airwolfathletics.com and use code BIGASP for 10% off purchases.
Dan, what's the best logo in cornhole?
Throw man.
I mean, Blackjack Cornhole, without a doubt. If you don't have any Blackjack Cornhole swag in your arsenal, I don't know what you're doing. So just stop what you're doing, head over to blackjackcornhole.com, and use code BIGASP, and it'll save you 10% if you spend over $50.
So get yourself a bag, a patch,
a hat.
A shirt, a
oh,
hat.
They don't have hats yet.
Not yet.
So
okay.
I got to talk to Trey. Or not Trey. I'm sorry. I had Trey in the mind. Troy. Troy, you're my boy. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to call you Trey. But Troy,
come on, let's get the hat.
Let's
game
get the
up.
Hats going,
come on,
man.
Buddy.
Come on, you can even make them orange if you want. Okay, like that's cool. We know that's your favorite color. You like Tennessee and stuff.
I mean, just make it, you know, an orange that we can wear to a Browns game.
Yeah.
Appreciate
well, cool.
It.
All right. So again, big code Big Asp, and we'll save you 10% if you spend over $50 at blackjackcornhole.com. So, you traveled a little bit this weekend.
I did. Ventured down to Cincinnati for a regional.
The Queen City, is that what they call it, right? Pretty sure.
Is that what, I don't even know.
Pretty sure, I think. I don't know.
We stayed in Kentucky, so.
So you guys, you played with Tony Rinaldi, right?
Yes.
And you guys played advanced in a freaking stacked field.
Dude, yeah. It was
like it was basically a conference, it looked like.
Oh, yeah. Like, it was, a lot of people, so they had anticipated 20 walk-ups. Once conference got canceled, they had 70.
Wow.
So it was a long tournament. I mean, that definitely set them back. It took, I mean, we got there, started at, I think, 11. We didn't get out of there till 11 p.m.
Wow.
It was a long, long day.
But you got to chat with some cool people, right?
Heck yeah, man. Chatted it up with the guys, Matt and Brett. They were both there playing together. Got to meet Jay Dotson and Sean Short. We have met Adam Hissner before, mm-hmm. But I got to talk to him and Cody Henderson as well. All of these guys were awesome. Like, I didn't play well at all in this tournament. I mean, terribly, but just the fact that I got to talk to them and chum it up a little bit with them, it was awesome. So just so you know, like, we got to get some local bag representation on here. So
we'll
bring them on out.
Yeah, I plan on. I definitely want to get Jay Dotson on. I think he'd be cool. Cody Henderson, I've been trying to get on. He has a really crazy work schedule,
yeah.
So it's been hard for us to kind of pin down a day and stuff. But we'll make it happen one of these days. I mean, they're Ohio guys. We got to have him on for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Short, that guy's stories that I heard from him. Oh. You know that he's been coming up to Cleveland for like 10 years. So he knows all these guys up here.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, just, yeah, and he has some stories.
Good people. I mean, they're from Ohio, so they're good people.
Exactly.
I got to throw a little bit. I threw my two deck arounds in the Ghost League. It was cold and it was freaking windy. I'm trying to work on perfecting the butterfly grip. I got to tell you, the more I threw it, the more comfortable it became. I felt like I can spin the bag much tighter. And I was just really trying to work on those little differences that Anthony tore us down a little bit.
Yeah.
I have such a hard time.
Not dipping that shoulder.
Yeah, as soon as I don't think about it, I go right back in my old tendencies.
Yeah.
But I was really, I focused primarily on not doing that little hitch in the back. So I was trying to, instead of in my backswing, turning my wrist a little bit. I was almost starting with a little bit turned and then just following through. It did seem to help. It took me a little bit of time just to kind of get my angles down. But once I got the line, I kind of, you know, hit my groove a little bit. But it was so cold and windy and it was no humidity. So my boards were playing lightning fast. So it was either in the hole or off the board.
Yeah.
It was just one of those games. But yeah, I am having a hard time not dipping my shoulder. I just feel like if I don't dip my shoulder, I lose a little bit of power. So I need to learn on leaning forward rather just to the right when I'm coming through.
Just like, I mean, the biggest thing for you, you just got to remember to not put your hand up on your hip. Because when I dip, you dip, we dip. Moving on.
I mean, sometimes I just don't even know what to do. This is what happens when we're in the same room.
Yes. It is, but that's joyous, though.
It is. I mean, thank God. So before I head over here, Val, who is my wife, she's like, are you recording tonight, right? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you know, we have an interview at 8, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, are you going to Dane's? I'm like, well, yeah. I'm like, we broke the ribbons down last week. Yeah, I'm going to keep coming over here. Everything sounds like it's going to get shut down because I don't know if you saw, Philadelphia is like full lockdown now.
Oh,
like,
they shut down all banquet centers today.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Ohio, so I'm like, yeah, I'm going to keep going over here. Mm-hmm. He's in our circle of friends, so.
And I'm
going
to have a whole bunch of time coming up here, you know, with work, I'm sure.
Well, I did throw a variety of bags this weekend, though. We have a bunch of bag reviews coming up. So I threw the Notorious bags. Spoiler alert.
Nasty.
They're fucking nasty.
Not only in looks, but in play.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they you can tell.
I haven't gotten to throw them.
It's been a long process for them to release the bags. You can tell they put the time in and did the research and all that stuff. So we have four sets of those coming up next week that we're going to review. Toss Tech bags. He sent us three different series of bags to throw.
Nice.
All very nice. Mazer bags again. I threw the Bag Daddies again. We have Legend Cornhole. I mean, we have a whole bunch of stuff coming up through
a slew for all of you.
So
all right.
I was really out there. I told Val, I'm like, I just need to go throw two deck rounds and I'll be back in. Well, I threw my second one and she didn't like come get me. So I'm like, well, fuck it. So I just emptied out. And the neighbors must have thought I was crazy. I had like, it seemed like 40 bags just piled on top of the board, just chucking them down, just trying to get a sense of how they play. But so be on the lookout for that. And then the rest of my weekend, as it pertains to cornhole, was spent breaking in bags. The newest break-in method has been kind of the fad, if you want to call it, has been boiling bags.
Yep.
Okay. Now I hadn't tried it yet and I'd always been more of a throw the bags to break them in kind of guy. But sometimes some bags just need a little help, okay? Like, I think a great bag that a lot of people might be familiar with is an RPG.
Yes. Oh,
if you just sit there and throw that bag, people are going to look at it and be like, what the fuck? Why is this thing so popular? But once it's finally fully broken down,
it is nasty.
It's a great fucking bag.
It just takes some time to get there.
So, again, there were all these different methods, and you go on to Addicted to Cornhole or any of these sites, and they're always talking about, like, oh, this is my method that I use to break down bags. So what we decided to do is do our own little Big Asp cornhole podcast bag experiment, okay? So I guess for any experiment to be legit, we felt that it was important to use various methods, but on the same series of bags. So we had five sets of Gen 2 Killshots 357s, okay, that we applied the following methods to them, all right? So the first one, and while I'm going over this, Dana's currently grabbing all the different sets of bags.
Okay.
So the first one we did was washed with hot water. Okay. The second one was we washed with hot water and had fabric softener with it. The third one was we boiled the bags for 10 minutes. The fourth set was we applied a solution called Sac Relax. It's a product And what we did was we did their recommended process that they have on the bottle.
That's from RNS Boards.
RNS Boards. And basically, so while we're on this real fast, let's just touch on it. So basically what this is it's kind of like a fabric softener slash lotion type material, I guess. So you apply a little bit in your palm, so like maybe like the size of like a nickel, and you rub it in your hands. And what you're doing is then you're actually literally then rubbing it all over the bag. You kind of
You just work it into the fabric.
Is no homo here, okay? But you're literally massaging your sacks.
You are,
okay?
Yeah. With lotion.
They have on RNS Board's Facebook page, they have videos, I believe, posted on like kind of the method. But it's basically you're rolling the bag in your hand, just trying to completely cover it. And then you rinse it with cold water. And then you submerge that bag in cold water, okay? Completely immerged it. And what I did was it was anywhere from 1 to 24 hours. I submerged it for an hour. And then what I did was... The owner recommended that we do this twice. Okay, so I did it twice to the bags. I then took it out of the water. I covered it in sack, relax again, and I submerged it for another hour. Okay, so that was the other method. And then the fifth method was a set that was just thrown, but we also threw it just in the dryer. All right, it was just in the dryer, tumble dry, low, all that stuff. Okay, so the five was, again, wash with hot water was one, wash with hot water and fabric softener was two, boil for 10 minutes. The fourth method was we applied the Sac Relax product. And the fifth set was we just threw in the dryer, all right, just like simulating if it was thrown. All right?
Yeah.
Dane. Oh, I think it's important to say all the first four methods that were washed or boiled or something, all of them besides just the throwing one, we're putting the dryer on low to no heat for 60 minutes with a few towels.
Yeah.
Okay, just to keep it consistent again in the dryer portion. Did you have a favorite method to do, first of all? Like how the bags felt? Or did you just find one method easier than the other? Like what are you most inclined to do again now since we've done all these?
So I have... obviously, I've always been a fan of throwing them in.
Yes.
That's always been my go-to. But... If I had to get something broken down quickly to where I'm comfortable throwing it in a tournament, dude, I mean, that Sac Relax was a nice product, man. I felt like it really did a good job on the bags. And then the boil method.
Now, okay, let me ask you. You don't know, I brought over two sets of 357s. You do not know which set I boiled and which set I used Sac Relax on. Tell me, do you think you know which one I use Sac Relax and which one I boiled out of those two that are in your hand?
Yes.
If you're cheating.
Why, because I sniffed your
you
sack?
You sniffed my sack.
Sac Relax, boil, flip-flop that?
Yeah.
Man, so all right, so I'm going to stick with Sac Relax then because that was the best feeling bag out of all of them.
Okay, yeah.
And I did the Sac Relax to my own set of brand new kill shots and loved it immediately. That bag was... broken in. I did it for a little bit longer than you, though, because it said 1 to 12 hours. I did mine for 6.
Okay.
And only one treatment, though.
And it's funny to say, so when we had our last regional tournament, we both had a set of 357 blackjack hill shots, right? And I had washed mine with hot water and then thrown in the dryer, right? I brought mine. I felt, they feel pretty broken. I think we're ready. Throw them down a few times. And then you had your set that you would use the Sac Relax on.
Yeah.
Which set did we end up using?
We ended up using mine with the Sac Relax.
Now, speed-wise, they played the same.
They're very
similar, okay?
Yeah.
That's why I didn't think that the solution affected the speed or the performance of the bag at all.
And it didn't stretch it out at all.
It felt like your bag was just a little softer. Like, it did. It felt a little bit more broken in than mine. So we decided, all right, we're going to throw yours instead of mine.
Yeah.
Now, boiling, washing with hot water, and then the Sac Relax, I thought were all very comparable.
Yes.
If we're fine-tuning, I do think the Sac Relax helped to break it down a little bit. I liked, out of all these methods, either Sac Relax or boiling.
Yes, I would agree.
After boiling, to me, is very, very similar. I mean, those two, you have a hard time telling the difference, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So if you're a bag boiler, I think it's very similar as to using the Sac Relax. I think... The Sac Relax, I don't know, there's just different, I don't know, it's just different ideas of how you like. I mean, I know some people don't like the idea of throwing it in this high heat type temperature. I know there are some bag makers, like Bag Daddy. He reached out and he said he does not recommend boiling your bags because I think he said like 50% of the fabrics are using glue of some sort to hold it.
It can melt it off of it.
So, but if I just based on this set of bags and the experiments that we did, my two favorite by far were the boiled method and the Sacrilax. Wasn't even close.
Yeah. Now the one that I'm gonna just kind of take off of the table is hot water with fabric softener.
I hate it, man.
Because I'm sorry, but it leaves a film. Like the ones that I've done with fabric softener, I've even done an extra like rinse cycle.
That's what I'm saying. And we rinse and we and you just can't get it all out.
It's still got that film. I mean, the 357 plays probably two speeds faster
now, than a normal 357. How much fabric softener are you using? I'm just asking. Just
so like when I do it, I usually throw it in with towels to not have it be the only thing in my washer. But I'm using like half of like a normal load.
Like half a cap.
Yeah, kind like of half thing. A yeah. cap. Yeah. I'm the same way. I mean, it's nothing excessive. And dude, like especially like the player's material on it. It feels like
this is the fabric softener one, right? Yeah, I can tell.
And it just like it just absorbs it and like it mats down that player's material and it just plays faster. Yep. It's just a faster bag.
I completely
agree.
What I'm going to tell you is if you are a fan of washing the bags with fabric softener, what I recommend is picking up some of the Sacrilax.
Yeah, I would too.
I mean, to me now I haven't talked to him and asked him this, but I would imagine that if you still like the process of washing them, I bet you could probably cover it in the Sacrilax and then wash them and then throw them in the dryer. I bet it would probably come out almost the exact same.
I think, but part of it, I think you'd still need to soak it, though. I think that's part of it, like really getting that whatever that concoction is mixed into the fabric a little bit more. But last thing I'll say about the fabric softener one. This bag is just bigger than the other ones.
It is.
It has gotten stretched out.
And these are Gen 2s, and they're all supposed to be exactly the same when they're manufactured. And it is. I mean, you can look. I mean, the pink is hanging over.
It stretched it out. I mean, it's not, like, super noticeable, but when you're looking at the other sets right next to it, it's noticeable.
Now, I know, at least in mine, it looks like the ones that I use Sacrilax is the smallest.
Yes, I agree.
Right, did not get stretched out as much.
That's what I noticed when I used it as well. It really kept the shape of that bag nicely.
Now, again, I thought boiling bags, listen, if I can bring a pot of water to a quick boil in 10 minutes, I was good to go. And so what I would do is I boiled the bag for 10 minutes. I then took the bags out, put them in the sink. I rinsed them down with cold water. I wrung them out. I let them sit there for like 10, 15 minutes. And then I threw them in the dryer with the towels. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised. Yeah. I mean, it definitely is not a bad method. Like I said, so it's either the Sacrilax or boiling. For me going forward, those are going to be my two go-to methods to break bags in.
Yeah. And, like, again, these are all the same style. We all did 357 kill shots.
Mm-hmm.
And then the disclaimer I'm going to throw in is that I washed with fabric softener my all slides.
Mm-hmm.
And that made that bag for me wonderful.
Yeah.
So it's not the same for every single bag out there. I know a lot of people like the fabric softener method, but doing this has kind of taught me that it does, in fact, leave a film. So I'm going to retire that method for myself.
Now, you also used the Sacrilax on your brand new Patriots.
I did.
And they're butter.
They're money.
And
they
feel great.
Yes.
I got a little nervous. I boiled mine just because I'm like, I don't know about using this stuff on carpet. I haven't tried it yet. But I know we played with them at the regional. They're great. So whatever solution he came up with, it seems to have the same effect as a fabric softener, but it doesn't leave that filmy residue sometimes. And again, I rinsed them out, but it wasn't like it was like a thorough rinse. I mean, I just rinsed them off a little bit and threw them in the dryer and they were good to go. I mean, it was a very easy process.
It is. I mean, I will say like give yourself a day.
Yeah. Like, I was going to say, if you're crunched for time, boiling is probably your fastest method.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like if you're picking them up out of the mail and you want to throw them later that night, you got
to
boil.
Boil them, then throw them in the dryer for 50 minutes to an hour on low to no heat, and you'll be good to go. If you have a day and you have $10, because if you go to R&S Boards on Facebook, you can grab Sacrilax for $10. Listen.
Yeah, that bottle's going to work for
I know you're looking on Facebook, and you're going to see that $10 raffle for that set of bags you're not going to win, okay? So instead, save the $10 and go check out the Sacrilax by R&S Boards and give it a shot. I'm telling you, I was pleasantly surprised. I just thought the name was hilarious.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get and try to do a review, and we were planning on doing this anyways, so it was like it fit perfectly in there.
Yeah, it did.
And I was a really big fan, so he sold me on it for sure.
Well, it was cool to like see something out just for breaking down bags.
Yeah,
too,
yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and transition here to our bag review. And bag review time is brought to you by Bagsboard, the maker of the original cornhole bag backpack. The highest quality materials used to craft these bags are made right here in the USA. Need patches? Bagsboard has some of the best around. Visit bagsboard.com and grab yours today. All right, so we're going to be reviewing Bag Daddies. Again, that's Bag, B-A-G, Daddies. We have raved about Jordan's bags before. We are huge fans of his 3.0 and 5.0 bags.
His Holy Monkey Shit bag.
His Holy Monkey Shit 5.0 bag was the 5.0. And so now we have three more to go over. So let's go ahead and let's start with the 6.0, okay? You want me to start with this one?
Yeah, go for it.
6.0 is what they consider, it's a dual slick style bag, all right, but with a controllable slower side, all right. It plays like a 7 out of 10 on the slower side, but as it breaks down, it does get a little bit faster, and the fast side plays at like a 9 or 10 out of 10. This is probably right up there with like the fastest bag he has in his lineup. It's also very hole forgiving. I will say right out of the box, though, it needs a little TLC. This type of material, though, and he's already said, like, don't boil his bags.
Yeah.
I would probably consider.
You can feel why.
Yeah, I would kind of want to maybe wash it, though. Or at least throw it in the dryer or something just to break it down, because it is a little bit stiff at first. It's cool material. It's something that I have never felt these two materials before.
Honestly, I would love to know if the one side is just the other side flipped.
It could very well
be. I think it might be.
It reminds me a little bit of like a Tsunami, like that type of material that he has on it. It plays a little bit faster than that, though.
His 3.0 also has that same.
Correct. Yeah. Very similar too. So, but really cool bag. It has a good fill too. I like his fill.
His fill's great.
It's a squared off bag, but it has a slightly rounded corners. It plays very well. Grabs the hole, finds it, slinks in. It's really nice. And this is this bag in particular, 6.0, is going to be ACL comp stamped.
Okay.
So it's not the pro stamp bag, but it's going to be comp stamped. I really liked it. It's a nice bag.
Speed ratings on it?
Yeah, as I said before, it plays like a 7 out of 10 on the slower side. No, sorry. 9 to 10 on the fast side. I would say probably plays closer to like a 9 out of 10 on the fast side. I do think the slower side, it's weird. As it breaks down, it actually gets a little bit faster.
Yeah.
So day one, it played like a 6, but the more I threw it, it did start getting a little bit faster. And I speed tested it against comparable bags, and it was playing more like a 7, what it had tested out. But again, as it breaks down, very hole forgiving. I love the fill. I like the shape. It has a nice feel in your hand. So 6.0 is a very solid bag. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we love the 3.0. 6.0 is right up there with it.
Yep. All right. So why don't you take over Air Raid?
Air Raid.
Yep.
All right.
So this is a bag. It's called the Air Raid.
Next one's the Air Raid. It's another dual slick. It's got a slightly slower slow side on it than the 6.0, and it is more broken in right out of the box than that 6.0 as well.
Yeah.
It's a great bag for slower conditions, humid, everything. Like it's gonna keep moving for you. It's pretty floppy right out of the box, and dude, it's a hole grabber for sure.
These materials, like, unlike, so 6.0 is something that, like, it's pretty unique material.
Yeah,
chances are you haven't thrown anything like that type of material. This feels familiar.
Yes.
This feels like all slide type-ish type material.
It actually reminds me a lot of Copper Scorpion.
A little bit, yeah.
Because it's
correct.
Got that little
yes.
You know?
And it plays similar to that,
very
too.
Very similar to it, yeah, with speed-wise as well. So, like, slow side's probably around 6, 7 out of 10, depending on conditions. And then slick side's 9 out of 10. This one's also comp-stamped, not pro-stamped. And, dude, another
sweet-looking bag, though.
Yeah, dude, I mean,
baby blue and gray.
Has,
yeah, I mean, it's just
always
killer,
has great
killer
designs.
Killer.
And it's another fantastic bag, like, coming out of Bag Daddy, because if you're a quicker bag thrower, This one's money, dude.
Yeah, so the first two are like a dual slick. And like I said, they just have a different texture and feel coming out of your hand. So if you're looking for something that's comparable to like an all slide or maybe I don't know, like you said, a copper scorpion. Yeah. I would say this is definitely comparable. This would be more up your alley. If you're looking for something that plays maybe more like a tsunami or like that different material that comes out of your hand, 6.0 is going to be more up your alley. Yes. For sure. All right, so the last bag we have is, it's called the Crossover. Okay, now this is his carpet bag.
Yes.
All right, so he's adding a carpet bag to his lineup. Now, I know you're a big fan of carpet bags, so do you want to take this one?
I'll let it ride, dude. I love this freaking bag.
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
So, first things first, it looks like, is the Fast Side the same on this as the Air Raid?
It might be.
It looks very similar, yeah. But the speeds played different.
Yes.
I felt like.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason. But, again, Sean said it, it's a carpet bag. It plays, like, happy merriment between that Reynolds carpet and BG's, like, classic Checkmate bag. I'd probably put it at, like, the Checkmate speed more than, like, the Reynolds carpet speed. It's slower than Reynolds carpet.
Oh, it's slow. Yeah, it's slow carpet.
But I love that about it because... although it's Checkmate speed, it plays like Reynolds carpet.
Yeah, so and I didn't have a Checkmate on me to check it out. Like, okay, no pun intended, to check it out.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if it's, like, literally the same stuff.
It's not.
It's very close,
this
though.
This is more synthetic
than Checkmate. It's closer to Checkmate than it is Reynolds, yes. Though.
Yeah, speed-wise for sure, and then, but, like, the kick-wise, though, I felt like this was closer to Reynolds, where, like, the kick isn't nearly as drastic.
Listen, if you are a carpet player and you think sometimes Pro Advantage gets a little bit too fast or you're playing really fast boards, you'll like this a lot.
Hell yeah. I mean, and again, as a carpet bag, it plays every shot you want to throw. Yeah. And it's got that great Bag Daddy fill in it, so it feels really good in
your
hand.
He does have a great fill. I know we've said this a few times, but he has a really nice blend. The weight of the bag, the size of the bag, it's what you want for a carpet bag. It feels great throwing airmails with it. It just feels natural coming out of your hand.
And it's meaty in your hand, too, so you can get a good grip on it.
Now, unlike the Air Raid and the 6.0, they're a little bit thinner bags.
Yeah.
This is a fuller fucking bag.
Yeah, this one's got
this is, you try to do that butterfly grip, and you're not pinching all the way through. There's no way. I mean...
yeah, I'm like... maybe 3/4 of the way down of what I usually am on it, but dude, it's I would love to maybe throw this in a competition with you
because this is actually ACL pro stamped.
Yes, it is.
So he has two bags this year that are ACL pro stamped. He has this Crossover and it's also the 3.0s.
Yeah.
And then the 5.0 that we also liked is comp stamp. So, but yeah, this is a really nice bag. He did a nice job. He does an excellent job on the shape of his bags, the closing seams. But yeah, hats off. I mean, I think out of all three, this was probably my favorite. Either this or the Air Raid, I was big fans of.
Yeah.
If I was playing on fast boards, I would give this a shot at a tournament. This a little slower than on the carpet side than I typically like, but if I know that going in and I work and I practice at it, then I'm okay. But if I just pick this bag up the first few times, I'm going to be short a few times on the board. Like,
I'm excited to work with this one just to see, the different shots you can hit. I mean, obviously, like, we know that you can hit the roll shots and everything with it, but I would love to see just the consistency that I could get on this bag because again, I wasn't feeling the kick that I was getting on some of these other carpet bags.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very nice bag. So hats off, Jordan, and make sure you check them out at Bag Daddy on Facebook.
Heck yeah.
Did you hear that?
Is it? Shameless plugs.
Cue the rap horn. All right. Check us at Instagram and Twitter at Big Ass Cornhole.
And Facebook at Big Ass Cornhole Podcast. Thanks again to our sponsors. Visit AirwolfAthletics.com for all your cornhole swag. Be sure to use code BIGASP for 10% off. And iHeartCornhole.com at Colorado Cornhole Connection for the best boards in the business. Code BIGASP10 for 10% off your purchase.
Bagsboard.com for the sexiest backpacks and patches in the game. And BlackjackCornhole.com because why wouldn't you just want to have the sweetest logo in the game on all of your stuff? Code BIGASP can save you 10% on your orders.
Sean, you're sitting here. You finally got this bitchin' hoodie in from our boys over at Instinct Sports.
Yes.
So we'll post some pictures of us in that. And if you're interested in grabbing yourself a hoodie, a jersey, T-shirt, hat, give InstinctSportswear.com a look. We are under their team section. We'd greatly appreciate your
hats
sports.
Are going to be in this week. I got word.
What? Hell yeah.
Cannot wait.
And, you know, we also, we got our stickers. We still have some of our cornhole patches left.
A few. I mean, I'm telling you what, they sold so freaking fast. Yeah. I think we're down to maybe the last 10 or so.
I think I only have like 4 or 5 in my bag. So.
People hit me up all day asking for these patches. So if you want it, you've seen them on Facebook, make sure you reach out sooner than later. First come, first serve.
Heck yeah. And then, also, we have gators available as well. From our boy Jeremy Hilliard. Was able to sell one this weekend. We gave some to the guys out there in Cincinnati. So hopefully we see Matt and Brett repping them at some point.
Yep.
But yeah, dude, the gators are sweet. I wore it for the majority of that tournament. Got a little hot in there, so I had to take it off eventually. But
all right. Well, make sure you stay with us. As we're about to be joined by the golden voice of cornhole, Mr. Trey Ryder.
Heck yes.
It was the longest interview we've ever done. It was,
does that surprise you, though?
I mean, oh, shit. Like,
who do we get next?
Yeah, I mean, because it was a fantastic interview. He was really open about certain things. And it's not the same old stuff, right? Trey's been on a bunch of different shows before. We wanted to take this a different route. So we kind of did it as like a way too early preview show. We got a little background into the bag testing protocol and things like that. So make sure you stick around for that.
Yeah, and it was fantastic. I'm still like giddy about the interview.
Oh, yeah. So, and Christmas ale is delicious.
Oh, that it is, yeah.
All right.
Going down smooth.
Well, as always, we hope you throw it straight, and it's nothing but four baggers from here on out.
Cornhole.
Later. Welcome back to the Big Asp Cornhole Podcast, where we are joined by the all-too-familiar golden voice of cornhole, Mr. Trey Ryder. Thanks for joining us, Trey.
Thanks for that. I like that nickname. I've never heard that one. That's a good
listen,
one.
Listen.
But I appreciate it.
Hey, nope. Hey, first, I got to start off by saying you look awesome, okay?
Yeah, you do, man.
I mean, I know you posted the other week about you wearing, I think, like an XL shirt for the first time in a long time. So congrats.
Yeah. Thank you. 137 pounds down.
Holy
so.
Shit.
Damn, well
I
done.
I mean, they need to upgrade your picture on the ACL website.
Yeah, no, I got a lot of things. I just threw away or donated about 60 pounds of clothes, so wow. I'm also having to go through that. There's a lot of change going on.
The purge is happening.
Change,
yeah,
there's,
for sure.
There's a lot behind it.
All right, well, I know it's not easy, so congrats. Though.
You're the voice of cornhole, soon to be the face of cornhole, because you're a dashing man.
Absolutely. All right.
For radio, so
you're looking at us right now, all right? That's why we do podcasting.
So most listeners of the show have heard you on various platforms before and have had like they have a pretty good idea of like how you got involved in the game and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted you to kind of start us off in a different way. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into commentating, and is this something that you were always interested in doing?
Yeah, so I'll kind of answer the second part first. So I was always interested in sports, always. So my uncle actually works for ESPN as a producer for one of the college game day crews.
Okay.
So if you watch the one last season, it was Greg McElroy and Dave Pasch along with Tom Luganville.
Okay.
And now it's a little bit – he still does the Dave Pasch crew. But that crew, he is the main producer for. And so my entire life, I grew up watching him going, you know, from job to job within ESPN. He did Monday Night Football for a while. Then he, you know, he's always done the Women's College World Series, and now he does one of those college game day crews, and he's also the main producer for the NFL draft. So he's always been involved in sports in some way, and so being as involved in sports as I was as a kid, and my dad was a two-sport athlete in college, both of my uncles were two-sport athletes in college as well. You know, I was in a passion for sports, so I always wanted to do something in that. Now the problem is that I didn't have the talent, and I was just naturally, my mind was built a lot differently than, say, my uncles and my dad's side of the family. I just always had an aptitude for logic and reason, and in school it was always math and science, and so naturally, you know, yes, I wanted to do something in sports. Whether if I couldn't be a professional athlete, you know, there's always a part of me that wanted to do something, you know, a coach, you know, a, I don't know, anything, a front office, something. But at the same time, my aptitudes kind of took me in a different direction. And so, you know, when I was in high school, when I started playing, and I've kind of told that story, eventually I went off to college and pursued a degree in engineering. And so even when I graduated college, I took a job as a chemical engineer in Tennessee, moved to Northeast Tennessee. And it was really, you know, I've always had an aptitude, or I've always had a passion for sports, but really I was always looking for some way to get into sports, yeah, like officially. So, and then cornhole kind of filled that for me. So when I was, like I said, I graduated in 2015 from Clemson and immediately took a job in Tennessee, moved out to Tennessee, and that's kind of when the 2015 over into 2016 is really when the ACL was first, you know, founded, right? And mm-hmm. So my dad got involved early with the league and got involved with Stacy, because Stacy Moore, the commissioner, he had kind of done this Carolina Cornhole Tour trying to get his feet wet, kind of, because at first he had always had tailgating as part of his business plan. He started inside tailgating. He's done a bunch of other things regards to tailgating. He was a part investor in a basketball team a few years ago. So, like, he's very involved in sports, and he wanted to get more involved in cornholing. So he started this Carolina Cornholes Tour as kind of something to get his feet wet.
Okay.
And when he did that, he kind of got with Eric because Eric was in the area. They kind of talked. My dad was passionate about growing, you know, the game in the Carolinas. And so when they started in 2015, 2016, my dad, I remember, I'll never forget, he called me, he's like, man, you gotta check this out. I'm telling you, I think this is, like, something that's gonna be big. They're talking about doing ESPN3, blah, blah, blah. And he's hyping this up. And I looked at him, I said, Dad, I am not gonna waste my time with that. There is no way I'm gonna waste my time with that. And, you know, he's like, no, I'm serious. And he kept egging me on. And then finally, I remember I was on shift work when they had the first championships of bags in 2016. So I come off shift work. I go to bed. I'm working nights. And I wake up about noon, and I'm like, I really should go back to bed. But they have this championships of bags on, and I'm watching Daniel McClain, and I'm watching Smokey Bolin, and Scott Lane, and watching these guys on ESPN3, and listening to Ryan Alessio and Chris Meacham, and I'm like, damn, this is really cool. I mean, you know, it was the first time I was like, wow, that is, you know, Cornell's got a chance at something. I mean, it was really, really good, and I enjoyed it a lot. And so I kind of talked to my dad after that, and we kind of went back and forth, and he's like, at least come to a couple events. So I played in an event here and there. And then, you know, kind of fast forward to February of 2017, my dad, he's like, all right, ESPN3 is coming to Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia. And we are going to do this. They have a national, okay? And so we're going to go, we're going to play, you know, and we'll see how we do. You can go and play, and we're going to check it out because ESPN3 is going to be there. It's going to be this big deal. And so we went. My dad played. My dad actually played really well the third. He big win. He beat, like, Caleb Avery, and then he followed up with or he came in second, actually, and he lost to Tyler Poitras in the finals, okay, who was outrageous that day. Outrageous. And third place, because Alan Rockwell was in the semi. Anyway, sorry. I get all tied up in there. So he goes, he plays. I played a little bit. I played like shit. So story of my life. But
us too.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
This past weekend was rough.
And then I remember going back to the hotel, and I'm like, let's watch some of the ESPN3 coverage. And I remember watching it, and I just remember saying, you know what, Dad, I think I could do this. Like, I think I, you know, just talking about the game and kind of analyzing it, and I'm like, I'm just so logical. There are so many times I've seen this two or three times now where I, like, when I watch it, I'm like, oh, I would have talked about this, or I would have said this, or whatever. And so I just found myself, like, really into it. Well, sure enough, 3 weeks later, you know, Stacy decides he wants to move a different direction. He wants to bring somebody else on for color commentary. And so I get a text from my dad, and I just, it said something along the lines of, Stacy's looking for a new color commentator, dot, dot, dot. And I just, you know, laughed back and forth. And then I was like, well, just let me know. And eventually he came to me and he said, all right, he wants people to submit a 2 minute, like, tape. He wants you to tape yourself for 2 minutes, not calling a game, but just, like, almost talking about why you want to do it or something like that. And I was like, what the hell? So I was on vacation in Greenville, South Carolina, in a hotel room. And I'm like, I guess I'm just going to plop this here and start talking about stuff. So I did that. I put it on. I just kind of ran. I felt like I rambled for about 2 minutes and then sent it in. And, you know, sure enough, about a week and a half later, I'm in a meeting at my engineering job and my phone's ringing. And I'm like, that's a Charlotte number. So I kind of stepped out. I took it. It was Stacy. He's like, you want to be on ESPN3 in Vegas in April? And I had never been to Vegas before. And I was like, yep, let's do it. So I got into that, and I got that gig. We went out to Vegas. It was a great time up on the link. And, you know, I did my first ever commentary, and I was nervous as all get out. I was shitting my pants. I was as nervous as could be. And then, you know, when I got done, I was like, oh man, that was just, I felt like I got a weight off my shoulder. It was really cool to get that first one under your belt or whatever. And then not a week later, ESPN calls us and said, we want to bump you to television for ESPN2 in July. And so then I got nervous all over again because we went from ESPN3, which was just digital, to ESPN2, which ended up being that legendary match between you know, Jordan Langworthy and Matt Guy. That was really a big start to the ESPN, to Cornhole and Television. So that was probably a long answer, but that is the full history. Everything since then has been just continuing to grow a role and continue to grow the league.
So let me ask you: is commentating something that you feel like you had to work on, or is it something that you feel like you continue have to work on and practice to? I mean, it's a craft, right? I mean, not anyone can just get up there and talk about things. Or is it simple as you watch a lot of cornhole, you analyze things, and you're just more comfortable now? Or is it something that you feel like you need to practice and kind of get better at as you're going on?
Yeah. So when I first started, I'm not going to say advantage. That's a bad word. The one thing I think I had going for me is I did a ton of public speaking in college. Okay. So I was an undergraduate TA for classes of 350 people.
Okay.
So I was used to speaking in front of people, not necessarily in front of camera. That was a little bit of an adjustment, but I had kind of developed myself as far as, you know, just talking is concerned, because that's a big, it is a big part of it. There's still times to this day where my mind is moving faster than I talk and I need to slow myself down. But so I had that kind of going for me out of the gate. Now, I actually, believe it or not, I watched some of that 2017 footage about a week and a half ago. And man, was I bad. It's, you know, you have to learn two things, right? You have to learn to be able to watch yourself on camera, mm-hmm. Which took a long time to do. You know, that's one question I get a lot is it weird watching yourself on camera? And I'm like, it used to be, but now everything is just critical, right? Every time mm-hmm. it comes up on ESPN News, if I get nothing else to watch, I'll turn it on and I'll kind of listen to what I was saying and, well, next time you should actually do this, or knowing what I know now, you should you need to back off a little bit to give some play-by-play some space there, or you should have been a little bit more assertive, or you should have shut up here, or you know, there's little things like that that I always, you know, little pointers here and there that I am trying to continually improve. And so I do continually try to get better from a pure technical perspective as far as a broadcaster is concerned. But also, you know, you're also picking up on things as you go and learning new things. Like, the roll shot is brand new. I've been calling everything on TV a flop or a roll shot, but it's guys like Anthony Ione that can come out and teach me the lingo, and now I'm really making an effort to learn what he's telling me, and I'm trying to adopt that into my own, you know, repertoire of things I can talk about. That way that other people can become more informed when we kind of go to when I start talking about it on TV, you know, people are picking up on those same things. So it's a lot of continuous learning in a sport that seems very simple. It's learning both on a technical and from a game side.
Yeah, we had touched on it last week. We actually had Anthony on last week for our episode, and we had touched on just how important commentating is to the growth of the game overall. And yeah. do you realize that? I mean, I know you're kind of in the moment now, but like, have you had an opportunity to step back and realize that without like your commentating and the knowledge of, you know, everyone that's talking about it, like it probably wouldn't have grown much, because it's not too exciting if you're just a casual observer of cornhole to watch grown people throwing bead bags at a board. But what you guys do and break it down, I mean, you kind of give it, you make it seem like it is like a true actual sport and skill involved. I mean, I think that's, you guys, I don't know if you've actually realized that yet, that how much you guys, how important you guys are to the game.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, right? Rob Chismar put it really, really good, put it really well about a year ago to me, and it kind of stuck with me, and it's true. And now I try to take what he said and tell it to everybody else that's trying to become some type of announcer, broadcaster, whether it's big time or small time within the sport. It's right now, the sport is still so young that whatever you say is, you are in essence writing the gospel of cornhole. You are writing that right now. And so, you know, the way you phrase things, how you talk about things, the importance of things, there's an inherent responsibility there. And it's a cool responsibility, and it's fun, but it's still a responsibility. And so that's what's awesome. And so, you know, even I've had conversations with Anthony, and I like Anthony a lot. I love Anthony. And he'll ask me some things and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Anthony, dude, write it. Do it yourself, man. I mean, don't look for me for permission, man. I mean, like, do it. Just go do it. You can be, for lack of a better term, an influencer yourself in this sport. So I think that's important. I think it's important for other people to develop voices. I think it's important for other people to establish their brand. And I think that's from all facets of the game, whether it's players, personalities, teams, clubs. I mean, I think developing brands is something that is of the utmost importance right now at the early stages of the game.
I agree.
Awesome.
All right, let's switch gears.
Yeah, let's switch it up here for a little bit. I wanna get into actual cornhole, like, playing now. All right, so do the new bag trends surprise you at all with them starting to play so fast? And like, do you think it's gonna like be a continued trend moving forward?
Doesn't surprise me a bit, and I am not concerned a bit. I've been saying this now for about 8 months now. I am certain of a sticky bag comeback. I am certain of it. And the bag industry and the trends in the game are always going to change. They are constantly going to change. It's going to be a fluctuation, and it's going to be dependent on whoever is at the top winning. I mean, really.
Yep.
You know, I don't think people realize the leaders that they are. But, I mean, to be honest, based on what I've seen, why has the flop and the roll shot become so significant? It's because Noah Wooten used it to perfection and executed it to beat Jamie Graham in the finals of the final chase back in July.
Yep.
That's why that shot is becoming a focal point right now. Eric Davis has been doing that shot for a year and a half. A year and a half. And he's been doing it probably better than anybody else in the country.
You can say it because he does.
So what I'm getting at is, if he's doing it better than anybody else in the country, why wasn't anybody else following it? It's because it finally got some exposure, and someone finally showed that, hey, I can do this and win. So anytime someone does that, it's going to be a shift in there. There will be a national this season where someone wins, like a Damon Dennis, that all he does is slide every bag in the hole, and then everybody's, and it's going to be doom and gloom again. Everybody's going to say it's the slick bags can't beat anyone. No, that's not the case. It was Damon Dennis on that particular day had the best possible opportunity to win by throwing that style of game. So I'm not worried about it. I know the sticky bags are, I think they're already making a comeback. In a smaller comeback, it's not completely here yet. But I'm ready for it. I'm a sticky bag guy myself, so I'm happy to see it come back.
Now, were you like old school suede sticky? Or are you like a carpet bag or?
So I mean, now I'm a carpet. I mean, okay. More of a carpet style. But like I was a slide right guy for a long time. I mean, slide rights. I mean, it used to be the stickier the bag, the better for me.
Okay.
Because I could. That's one thing. That's the problem with me nowadays. I can't really find a bag that stays on the border too easily for me. I got a pretty hard throw, low line drive type style. So I learned from the way back when you had to spin the hell out of it if you wanted to go straight.
Yeah.
So for me, yeah, I like sticky bags.
Are we ever going to see a tournament? Like, would the ACL ever consider putting on a tournament where it's you guys provide the bags? Like, just one, like, I think it would just be a really cool concept to see all the best players in the world, everyone using the same bag, and just to see who would come out on top. I don't know. I just find it, I think
it
would be cool.
Just throw a suede tournament. I want to see an
all-suede
tournament.
I just think
it would
be cool. I mean, I don't know.
So, not for points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not for points, but, you know, it's an interesting concept, right? Because, you know, we're trying to balance here, because one thing that we want to do is really push out our start putting a lot of effort behind our manufacturers, right?
Yeah.
Put a lot of support behind our manufacturers, because now, you know, we have a vested interest in their success now, which is something different than it has been in previous seasons, right? Now we want, now more than anything, if our bag manufacturers are successful, we're successful. And so, you know, would a tournament like that be interesting to get like one sponsored group to do all the bags for that tournament? Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. At the same time, it's like, do you want to single somebody out in that way? So, I don't know. I think there might be an opportunity to do something like that on a smaller scale,
yeah.
Like an invitational style event. That maybe something fun to see.
I don't know. I just think it would be something different. You kind of touched on it, the bag policy. Last time I checked, there were 46 different bag makers who had submitted bags. Is that number still around there, right?
It's outrageous. There's hundreds of series. It's the bag market is outrageous right now.
Yes,
yes it
is. Outrageous market.
So first, that whole process, it had to be a little overwhelming at first, right? I mean, hundreds of bags coming in. And then, can you touch a little bit on the bag testing process? I mean, how involved were you? What do these bags have to go through in order to get, like, the ACL Pro stamp of approval, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so as far as the approval process goes, I wasn't as heavily involved in the approvals. But really what we were trying to do is we got a good bit of submissions from... I'm trying to phrase this as professionally as possible, but you can tell it was a mom and pop that, you know, didn't really have a lot of experience with making bags, looking to be like an ACL Pro stamped bag. And one thing that we try to make the differentiation this year is if you're going to be an ACL Pro stamped bag, then we are putting our sign of approval that we could say this bag is what the pros should be using. And so because our mark is on it this year, we put a little bit more effort into saying, you know, this needs to be a professional looking, feeling, and performing bag.
We do a lot of bag reviews, so we get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you're saying it very nicely, though. So you're doing very nicely.
Yeah,
you're doing a good
job.
So
I mean, there were a few bags that literally we called them and said, look, you can be on the competitive list, but there's no way this is an ACL Pro bag. It can't happen. Now, as far as the back testing goes, actually, you know, the man in charge of that is actually my old man. He actually recently just left his 25-year career in banks in IT. He's now officially on staff with the ACL doing doing a variety of different things, but working a lot with bags and e-commerce and other things, and other ways we're trying to grow and branch out. But he is kind of overtook that role as main tester when we first got in. So the ACL spent a good amount of money on some testing equipment, and essentially what it is one machine that can do a lot of different things. It's really measuring two different things, the two main tests that we're doing right now. One is a friction test, mm-hmm. and one is what they're calling a droop test.
Okay. So obviously to test speed or how floppy a bag kind of is.
Floppy,
yeah.
Exactly. So so for the friction test, we actually, our new the boards that we're going to be using on the broadcast court this season, we've developed a new finish and a new style of board, if you will. So that's kind of a teaser for something later I can't get much into. But essentially, that board, we've literally cut a section of that board, put it at the right angle, and we've attached these clips to the ends of bags. And what we've done is we put it at the bottom of the board, and this machine up the board will pull the bag up a certain length and then stop. And so what it does is, if you want to get real technical,
is it measuring like the pounds of force then it takes to drag the bag up then?
So it's actually measuring what we call the coefficient
of friction,
static
okay.
and kinetic friction.
Okay.
So static friction is actually the amount the coefficient required to move the bag from rest.
Mm-hmm.
And then kinetic friction is as it's sliding up the
Correct.
Board. So there's two different numbers. So one thing that's actually kind of cool is in the results, we are going to report both.
Okay.
So what it's going to give you an indication, the way we're phrasing it at least, is the kinetic friction factor or the speed friction factor is going to give you an idea of how fast that bag slides up the board.
Yep.
The static kinetic factor is actually going to give you one, how hard it is to push.
Yeah,
which
that's
is kinda
awesome.
Cool. And so, there's a lot of different variations to that, right? So, first I'll go into the droop test. So the droop test then essentially puts a bag on top of, on a line that separates two plates. And
okay.
what it does is one plate will drop ever so slightly, keep dropping until the bag is no longer touching that one tile that is dropping.
Okay.
And so the distance that bag falls, that differential is going to give you a droop rating or a flex rating of how much that bag will move. So
let me ask you, so when you're testing these bags, are these brand new, like out of the box, like not treated at all kind of things? Or is it just basically however the manufacturers wanted it to be tested, they send them to you? Or do you require that they have no treatment, they're not washed, they're right, as how a brand new consumer would get them the first time?
Yeah, so step one, so the cool thing is we have this equipment, right? So
mm-hmm.
we can do whatever we want with it. So since we've invested in it, we're always going to have it. So step one, the first initial results that are going to come out are going to be just out of the box, brand new, no modification, no nothing.
Okay?
Straight out of the box. So yes, Your leading question is, where you're going is, they're not going to play the same as if they've been broken in. Absolutely 100%
mm-hmm.
correct. But what we can then do is spend the next 6 months trying to find a way to standardize the break-in process. Maybe it's boiling bags like everybody's doing now.
Well,
maybe
listen back to this episode. This is what our episode's all about today. Is we ran our own experiment on five identical sets of bags, and we applied different wash and break-in methods. Now, obviously, we're not going too far in the science. It's more subjective information, but just of what our favorites were. So I'll be interested to see all that stuff. I'm a huge science nerd, so I love all that stuff.
Yeah, someone even sent us this this spray that they are telling us is a break-in spray.
Is it called Sacrilax?
We just did it.
We reviewed it.
Did it work? It did.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, I mean, people have already heard our part of this episode by the time they're coming, so it worked great. I mean, it really, and you know what? It was easy, and it didn't leave a residue somehow. Sometimes fabric softener, if you don't rinse it out extremely well, sometimes it almost leaves this film. Sacrilax, it's nice. It kind of dries. I mean, it almost is the same as boiling a bag. To me, they're very, very close. Sometimes if you get that super, super stiff, almost like cardboard type material, Sacrilex seemed to soften that a little bit better than boiling did. So I think it just kind of depends on, but in particular, like in carpet bags, I don't like to treat it anyway. I mean, I'll boil it, but I won't put anything on it. So I think to me, it just kind of depends on what bag I'm doing just to figure that kind of part out.
Oh, I didn't.
That's hilarious.
I did it on my Patriots from Reynolds, and they were money. This was not planned, people.
This was not planned at all. He did not know we had Sacrilax, but I think the name was great, so I had to get. We had to try it out, so it was just great.
That's hilarious. Yeah. So someone sent us that. I mean, you know, we've talked about possibly getting some type of industrial, not mixer, but like a tumbler, and like putting a certain number of revolutions through the tumbler or something along those lines. So. The wheels are turning.
Okay.
You know, no pun intended, but like, you know, we're working towards trying to develop. And the other thing is that people, you know, you may sometimes forget is that we've put this, we originally got the equipment and we put it in this big area and we did the testing over 2 days. And one day we left the door open on the garage.
Okay.
And the results were completely skewed because the humidity and the air affected the results immensely. And so we had to put everything in a climate-controlled room and do it all at the same time, you know, and that took forever. But, you know, you had to do it all at once type of thing. So the other thing that we'd like to explore eventually, too, is what happens if we do a different type of finish on the boards? What happens if we put a little bit of moisture on the bags? You know, there's a different ideas that we have to kind of show different variations, and that way people can really be informed and say, oh wow, this bag, you know, is slower than this bag, but then in the moisture it actually becomes faster than this bag. So if I need something in my, you know, in my bag that can hand up in weather, I actually want to bring this set as like a backup, and then it becomes more of a strategic play for a lot of people. So there's a lot of different things that we can do with it. But yeah, that first pass that we'll be publishing here over the next couple weeks is going to be straight out of the box, brand new.
Okay. All right. So I wanted to add, just while we're on this, the bag stamp process. So now that bags are stamped for approval, is the ACL going to be monitoring it all? Manufacturers from producing bags with like trademarked logos. Now, listen, I want to be the first one to say, like, I'm a huge fan of custom bags. I collect bags. I have way too many. Okay. But like, it seems odd to me that if you guys are going to require them to meet certain standards and you guys are putting your approval on it, that it might be something that you guys will watch in the future. Is that at least on the radar in the future kind of coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's a young process still, and something that we're still trying to develop and how to police it and how to do everything in that regard to make sure people are following the rules, right? But we have to. Anytime we're putting our logo on something that's now a registered trademark, you know, the ACL Pro logo is a registered trademark. It's no longer just a TM. It's got that R with a circle on it, which is a big deal to us. Mm-hmm. And so anytime we do that, we certainly have to, have to watch out what people are doing. We don't want to open ourselves up to liability. We don't want to open up our manufacturers to liability, right? Because we are partners now. That's one of the many positives, I think, with this new policy this year is now we have a vested interest in both the success of the American Cornhole League as well as the success of our bag manufacturers. And so I think it's important that we got to look out for them and make sure that they're not doing anything that they shouldn't be doing. So yeah, that'll certainly be something on our radar this year.
Okay. Enough of my serious stuff. Dane's going to go to the fun stuff now.
I mean, I just have one quick fun question. all right. So what's your favorite throw style that you see in the game? Like who's someone's throw that you would love to emulate?
a good one. I think my favorite throw in the game right now is probably Trey Burchfield. Trey is...
a robot.
He's a robot. I think the thing that makes him so successful is the same thing that made Matt Guy so successful is that he can manipulate a slick bag and still be and still have control. Mm-hmm. Now, for Matt Guy, that is his, like, that's always been his throw. It's just, he's just always been lofty with it. Trey Burchfield is a player that used to be a really hard thrower, and he was able to soften it somehow to the point where he's still putting a ton of rotation on it. He's hitting the front of the board, and it's not flying off the back every time. I can't tell you how difficult that is, right? It's easy to have a Damon Dennis throwing slick side on the game changers when your bag is coming down, nosediving into the board and killing all the momentum.
It lands real soft.
It is outrageously difficult to put the perfect amount of loft on a Burchfield bag to the point where he can still, if someone ends up on the sticky side and he needs to go through it, he still has that powerful throw. So he doesn't right now have a weakness in his game. His weakness only comes when he's not there mentally, which is becoming fewer and farther in between than it once was previously. So between the push, he's got the nasty airmail. We saw it in the USA Cornhole National Championships. We saw it in doubles at the World Championships for the ACL. I mean, if he gets all those shots together, he's one of those guys that has an unbeatable zone. There's only about three or four guys in the world that have that unbeatable zone, and he's one of them. So I mean, I just think, I'd probably say he's got the smoothest delivery. He's got the prettiest throw. If I was teaching someone, I'd say watch him and learn that.
Yeah, I mean his fluidity is just, it's unreal. Every throw just looks exactly the same.
Well, and last year, like you said, he was throwing slick side game changers, and then he shows up at the USA Championships and wins with BG a carpet bag. It's just the kid's super super talented. So I'm a self proclaimed cornhole loser. Okay, so I love watching your breakdown videos on YouTube, and you talked percentages and likelihood of making certain shots. So I wanted to know what do you feel is like the perfect way to approach. Like what's like the perfect round, right? So like, let's say you start off with a blocker. What is the best next throw to make? Does it depend on your skill set? Like, does it depend on your percentages of what your airmail is, or can you throw a roll flop back? So like, what would be your ideal frame? I guess we want to call it.
That's an impossible question. I think it 100% determines on I think it matters on who you are and who you're playing as well. I'm going to go back to the Trey example, right? Trey Burchfield had a perfect strategy against Eric Davis in the finals at the USA Cornhole Championships, and I'll tell you why it was a perfect strategy. It's because all week long, Eric Davis hadn't lost anything, and that was because when Eric Davis put up a block, people blocked behind it, and then Eric Davis was hitting his flop shot at a similar percentage to what people were hitting airmails, okay? Similar percentage. So if that percentage is similar, then it is impossible for you to beat Eric Davis. Impossible. If you throw a flop shot percentage, the same percentage as an airmail, you lose to the flop shot every single time. Why is that? Because the flop shot stays on the board. Yep. And the airmail does not. So you're gaining that plus one advantage throughout the entire tournament. So you can't beat it. So what does Trey Burchfield do? He says, every time you put up a block, I'm throwing an airmail. I don't care. Doesn't matter. I don't care if I miss. I'm not doing this. And that's exactly what he did. He pushed it in. I mean, he threw the airmail and he hit them. Then what that did for Eric Davis, it forced him into a flop shot. Some of his rolls – if you will, kind of landed to the left, which is going to happen. It is a it's a higher percentage scoring shot than an airmail, but it's a lower percentage in the hole shot than an airmail is. So in that regards, he's going to get less bags in the hole on that following shot, but at the same time, it left Trey Birchfield the ability to clean up bags if he needed to as well, because bags were sitting in front of the hole. If Eric Davis missed on a roll, if Eric Davis missed on a push and got picked, it left the door open for Trey Birchfield, and that's why he was able to be successful. So I think if you have an unbeatable airmail, if you have an airmail that you're 100% confident in, and you're playing against a flop shotter, then hey, sometimes an airmail in that second bag ain't a bad thing. But if we're talking, you know, advanced level players, if we're talking competitive level, upper competitive level players, you know, what's a great strategy? I mean, I'm a fan of making rounds dirty, right? I think that's a lost art, or not. That's a bad phrase. It's an art that not many people have gotten used to.
Yeah.
But it's also one that I think it's really dependent on knowing your opponent. One thing that I love to do is I love to play against I love to play against people that are really, really good at just throwing a lot of bags in the hole at one time, because I tend to I can score a little bit on those type of people, because if I can make a round dirty, sometimes I'm used to scoring in those situations. So for me, you know, my perfect round is, I do like to double block. I do like to get around and sit in front. I do, you know, I'm not a big fan of the follow-through push, because I can't really do it that consistently. It's like guy kicks left and right. But, you know, I think that's an opportunity as well. And you know, I like double block and airmail shows. I mean, those are always fun rounds to play in and fun rounds to call, too.
That's what gets all the girls.
Exactly.
All right, so Trey, we recently saw the new rookie class came to the ACL. So do you think 5, maybe 10 years from now, we're going to look back on this quote-unquote rookie class and just be like, God damn, this was like a phenomenal group that came in here?
Yeah, I said that a few weeks ago. I said that I made a bold prediction somewhere, and my bold prediction was this year's rookie class will be the best ever in the ACL. So I 100% believe that. I think you have a guaranteed 2, and an up to maybe 4 or 5 players that can immediately become top 10 players coming into this season. I mean, that's outrageous.
Oh, yeah.
It really depends on how their season goes about. I mean, you're going to have your obvious one. Like, you're going to have Eric Davis and Matt Guy. Those are top 10, maybe top 5 players, probably top 5 players that are immediately – that's an easy one. But then you got some other ones. It's like, how does Tony Smith handle the pressure, right? Because he flew under the radar for a long time, but he ain't going to do that.
No,
he
not anymore.
This season. So he's got to play with that pressure. That's something that Matt Morton had to learn how to do the second half of the season, is play with a little bit of pressure and play with a little bit of expectation. And that can weigh on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got people like Brett Guy. Brett Guy has lived his life being just being overlooked all the time. And so that is, provides him motivation. So I think he's going to be someone that could be a top 10 player right out of the gate too. Then you have, you know, Caleb Batson. Caleb Batson's got the talent. Mike Harvey impressed the hell out of me at the USA Cornhole National Championships. I was blown away with how well he threw. I mean, there's a lot of great talent this year. A lot of great women that I love, that we're getting more and more women involved that are going to make this division really good this year.
So let's change gears just for a half a second. You just touched on, there are a lot of great rookie women coming on, and we're actually fortunate this year. I think there it's either 5 or 6 all women like pro doubles teams, right?
Yep.
How close are we to seeing an all women's team win a national championship, or make a broadcast?
Yeah, I think we're pretty close
this year.
It's very well possible, right? So you have to, I mean, there's a couple different things that come into it, right? The talent is there, right? I just want to see if there's a team that can put it all together up here, right? So I think the best team to have a chance to do that may actually be a surprise to some people, because I think that what everybody expects me to say is someone like Sam Finley and Allison Peters, which I really think they have a shot to. But I think the little extra experience from Christine Packey and Courtney Coy,
they've both been under the lights. Yeah, I'm saying. Yeah,
they're used to that. And I think Courtney Coy is going to come into the year kind of pissed off, because I don't think she had a great season last season, and I'm not insulting her by saying that. She put it a lot meaner to herself than I would put it. So she's not happy the way she played. I think Bags played a big role in that last season. So I think this year she's got a real good shot. Someone I want everybody to watch out for, especially in singles, is Cameron Belvin. I think Cameron is lights out. She is just so good when she gets into it and she gets in a rhythm. So I think she could make a splash in singles. Her and Allison Hine. Allison is, I saw a lot of improvement from her in the second half of last season. If she continues that way, then I'm ready to put them in that tier as well.
Okay.
But I need to see that, you know.
See, you gotta see it first, yeah.
Yeah. Sarah, I shouldn't say I wish, because that's a poor phrasing to use. But, like, in a way, I would have liked to have seen in the pro division how Sarah Cassidy and Cheyenne Renner would have done. They're going to be playing women's doubles together, but they're not going to be playing in the pro division together. Cheyenne Renner is going to be playing with Brian Brewer out of Arizona, and Sarah Cassidy is going to be playing with Kaylee Hunter. Now, her and Kaylee Hunter are very interesting because they're both going to be wild cards, in my opinion.
Yep.
Sarah Cassidy will be a wild card because she just won. She won everything. Now, how can you recover from getting that first ever signature win? Do you keep going, or do you have that little sophomore slump that we see a lot of people get into? And then Kaylee is just someone, she is fire back, fire. I mean, just throw. And so, you know, from that perspective, that can be really good from a rhythm perspective, but can kind of hurt you in the long run if you're not careful with it. So, yeah, women, we got a lot of great ones. I mean, there's a bunch I didn't even name there, and they're going to be mad at me, and I'm sorry, but, you know, I think we got a great slate.
Absolutely. So, who do you consider to be, like, a great, like, the great ambassadors of the game right now? And they don't have to be, like, necessarily the best players, but who do you think is just helping to grow the game well? Like, and they can be players, they can be non-players. Like, who comes to mind when you hear that term?
That's a good one. Oh, you could have prepped me for that one.
No, man, come on, I gotta make something surprise.
No, that's a good question.
Because to me, being in from Cleveland, you're actually on a show. To me, Cito Soto comes to mind. Just as when we got involved in the game, maybe a little less than 2 years ago, really getting involved, he was one of the first people that came over. And to me, like, that's how I think, like, pros should be. You know, like, always helping to grow. So to me, I've always looked up to him as being an ambassador of the game. So I was just giving you a chance to think. So I was trying to fill in the time.
Cito does come to mind. Cito's done a great job. He's so passionate about the game. He really is, and he wants nothing more than this to be the biggest thing in the world, and that shows. I certainly agree with that. You know, I give a lot of credit to people that can maintain positivity and maintain a professionalism on social media, because it's a hard thing to do. And so a lot of our pros are slowly learning that, but there's a lot of pros that are doing a really good job on social media right now.
Oh, yeah.
And putting a great effort into continuing to build their brands and things like that. I think, you know, you have people like Adrian Johnson, who busts his butt on social media.
Yep.
Does a really good job. I think Jay Corley is kind of following in those footsteps as well. Not directly in Adrian's, but I'm saying he's doing a really great job there. Anybody that's continually trying to
maintain. I think Drew positivity. Brown. I think Drew Brown's right up there.
Drew Brown's doing a really good job too. You know, someone that's not a player is Mike Morton. I love Mike to death. So we got a lot of things in store for Mike. So he's a good one. You know, Mike's going to be special for us, which is, you know, he's good. We may make him more famous than his son, so we'll see how that goes.
Listen, he's a friend of the show too. He, I think he stole the show when we had Matt on. So, it's gonna be interesting. So, all right. Yeah. So, just before we get into like the, we're gonna have a special edition of Fun Random Shit. Way too early predictions. All right, now I'm sure you haven't taken your time and I know you do your write up and stuff, but way too early. So I'm putting you on the spot here. In no particular order, who finishes top five in doubles?
Top five in doubles, no particular order. Okay.
I'm gonna rip mine off after you.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go with the obvious. I think there's two obvious ones. One is Matt Guy and Jamie Graham, mm-hmm. and the other is Trey Burchfield and Derek King. if you want to unseat those, you gotta. You gotta be the best in the world. So
yeah.
I think that they're a shoo-in. Now the other three are really up in the air. So I'll probably give you two that are no surprise, and then maybe I'll try to think of one that's a little bit more of a sleeper, a little bit of a reach.
Okay.
I think I have to go with the players that finished number one and number two last season, right? So I have to go with Jimmy McGuffin and Greg Geary, and I have to go with Kyle Malone and Dalton McLeod. Mm-hmm. And the reason, and they're for actually two different reasons. One, is for Kyle and Dalton, it's because every single time, everybody does the same thing. They go, you know, when I watch them, they're good, but like, I don't know. They don't wow me. I don't really think they can do it again, and then they do it again. So, you know, I just think they're
all they do is win. I mean, those two, since they partnered up,
they just know how to win.
Yeah.
It's not pretty. It's not flashy. They just win.
I mean, it's pretty much like, it was kind of like the Patriots for a long time. I mean, you guys had your one glory year with Randy Moss and stuff, but that wasn't Patriot football. You know what I mean? So.
Right.
All right, I'll give you one homage.
I appreciate the reference.
Yeah, that's the only reference you're going to get. Yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy and Greg are, ever since Greg slowed down his throw to a Damon Dennis pace, I think that's three Damon Dennis references. I don't know
why. It is, yeah.
I don't know if he listens, though, so we'll find out.
That's true. Ever since he slowed himself down, it's made him more frustrating to watch, but it's made him an absolutely better player. It's night and day. He is nasty. He's nasty. And Jimmy just knows how to close. So Jimmy, as a singles player, it's almost like as a singles player, he doesn't feel the pressure enough. You know? I'm just like, well, I don't know, I guess. But like in doubles, he's like, I'm not going to let Greg down. It's not going to happen. And he just... Jimmy's one of those guys that plays better when he's under pressure. He has to be under pressure, or he's not going to play well. So I would say I got to stick with those four. And then if I had to go with a fifth, so a fifth would be someone under the radar, right? Because I think there's some other ones that I could throw in there that wouldn't be as fun, like Brett Guy, Eric Davis,
yeah.
Brian Windsor, Isidro Herrera.
Boring, you're right.
No,
yeah,
Mets.
Yeah, it's boring. I mean.
Yeah, it's boring. So I will go. I'll go ahead. I'll pull the trigger. I'm going to say top five teams sneaks in there, Caleb Batson and Eddie Grindersleeve out of Texas.
Okay.
I don't think anybody's necessarily saying, oh, Trey, that's not really... Well, I mean, they're a top 20 team, but top 20 team getting into the top five, I think, is a pretty big jump. So.
I mean, Eddie's been there, done that, you know what I mean? But, I mean, a rookie, I mean, Caleb's still a young dude, you know what I mean? I think that Josh Gross and AJ are going to have something to say about that, but...
I do, too. I need to see more consistency out of Josh.
Yeah.
And he knows that, and I'd say that straight to his face. He'd look at me and said, you're right. I haven't... I haven't seen the Josh Gross that I saw in 2019. I'll tell you this much. I'll change my mind based on the way that AJ Sims is throwing. If Josh Gross 2019 is playing Josh Gross 2021, like 2019 Josh Gross, oh, fine. I'll take AJ Sims and Josh Gross and put them in there. But I got to see that Josh Gross first.
Fair enough.
So I'll tell you, we had three out of the five the same. So obviously the top two, and then I also had Dalton McClellan and Kyle Malone in there, but I got to go with our local Cleveland boys here with Eric Anderson and Timmy Jonas. Those two are having a lot of fun throwing together, and they're playing phenomenally.
And I don't know if you followed along, but they're doing pretty well in a tough conference up here.
Yeah, they just...
They are. The question mark is not Eric Davis. I mean, Eric Davis. The question mark is not Eric Anderson.
Yeah.
And it's... I got to see... It's one thing for me, for Timmy Jonas, to win two or three games. I need him to go to a national and win eight games.
Yep. Yeah.
So... He could prove me wrong, and I'm not saying prove me wrong. I'm not saying he can't do it or anything like that. He absolutely can. He's got to. It's one of those things where he's got to earn it.
My thing is just the ease that they have playing with each other. They're very relaxed, looking across the board at each other, and to me, that's half the battle. Like if you get to play with someone that you thoroughly enjoy looking across at, then I think you're already winning at that point. But and then my fifth and final team, it's another local group though, but we gotta go with Devin Harbaugh and Brandon Corwin, because I mean, to me, I think Devin Harbaugh's one or two bags away from being one of the nastiest players in the world.
You are 100% correct there. He is that close. He's just gotta finish.
Yeah, that's what it is.
His thing is not anything but just finish, learning how to finish, and he can be there.
Absolutely. I mean, we already saw what Magic Corwin did with Birchfield. So, you know, maybe he's, you know, got Harbaugh down in the lab doing his stuff to him right now. And,
I love Brandon Corwin. He's one of my favorite players to watch.
He told us that we can't tell anyone that he has, like, you know, young cornhole kids, like, chained up in his basement and he's just training them all the time. So we're not allowed to say that on here. Exactly. So we're not saying that, Brandon. Okay. All right. So we're going to move on to... we're going to run – it's a segment we call Fun Random Shit, but we're going to switch it up a little
Special
bit.
Special edition.
We had posted on Facebook earlier tonight before that we were having you on, and we posted some questions. And so we're going to read them, read out who gave the question, Dane, and then we'll fire them at Trey.
All right, so from Brandon Zoll, he asked, what's going to happen when certain states shut down and other states don't when it comes to points at regionals and conference?
Yeah, so if we get to a point where there's – we have some type of lopsided shutdowns, then certainly we'll have to reevaluate the point season, and we're going to do what we can to make it fair. So that we did the same thing last year. As soon as some places started to shut down, we had to cut off points and stop awarding points. But at the same time, you know, and then also cut back how many events are going to count for you for the whole season, right? So it may be that we have to temporarily try to do some things virtually, which isn't the same, we know. But at the same time, there may be some opportunities to kind of to make up some ground there, if you will. Everything's being fluid. It's in the player's guide, though, that if we do have to shut down completely the entire point system for a certain amount of time, however many regionals and conferences are missed, there's already in the player guide an amount how many less events are going to count towards your open standings based on how many events get shut down.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay. All right, so then John Hosler asked, who would your dream announcer partner be in a national broadcast? And it does, I don't think it has to pertain to cornhole. Like, I already know I would love to broadcast with Chris Berman because that's my boy. Loved him since I was a kid.
Gosh, that is good. Man, you guys are, that's a good question. So, like, oh man. There are so many good options, too.
There's only one name you can't say in front of us. And that's Mr. Joe Buck.
Yeah, don't say Joe Buck.
Just don't say Joe Buck.
Personally, I do think Joe Buck is hated on a little too much, but I'm not going to pick Joe Buck.
We're Clevelanders,
he's too biased,
all right?
Man.
We're Clevelanders.
Let's not do this. You're going to get me all fired up. We're not going to do this. All right? We're going to end this on a good note, though. So.
You know, I, being a, being a,
You can be a honk, it's okay.
I'm going, so I, to give you an idea, I'm going back and forth between like two very different styles, right? So I really like Chris Fowler because I think he's high energy. I like the college football he brings. And so from that, I feel like that would be a high intensity, amazing broadcast. But then like on the other hand, like to be able to sit with like Jim Nance would just be like, I feel like that broadcast, it would be one of those broadcasts where, like, the game is going on and Jim and I are just, like, just talking. Like, it doesn't, I don't know. So I'd probably pick one of those two for one of those, for very different reasons, but that's a fantastic question.
All right, so we got two more, all right? Parna Triple P Sem wants to know who leads the overall Trey versus Dad one-on-one battle.
Oh, it's not close, Eric.
Okay.
Not close. It's bad too.
Okay.
It's,
is it on a chalkboard somewhere?
If you cut it off in 2015, we were pretty darn close. Okay. I'd say 50-50. But post 2015, it's a bad record for Trey.
Yeah, but you know, you got youth on your side, so you, that number can always sway later on. You got time.
That's true. He's got bad knees.
All right. So the last one is comes from our friend Thomas Stranger. And he wants to know, when will Mike Morton be sitting next to you on broadcast putting out crazy statistics?
Yeah, so we have a really special role for Mike Morton that we're developing kind of behind the scenes. So he's not going to be in a broadcaster booth with me calling matches, but Mike's going to have a really interesting opportunity coming up here in a bit, an opportunity for the ACL to... We have some really cool media opportunities, I'll say that much, and Mike is going to be at the forefront of one of those opportunities, being able to do something that he does best, and that's talk about cornhole, that's about delivering up-to-date information, talk about the deep dive analytics of the game, and do it in a way that's a lot of fun. So
it's awesome.
It's not going to be a podcast, but it's going to be something I think even better for Mike, and we have some really cool things brewing. So
awesome.
We haven't forgot about Mike. We know how special Mike is in that regard. So we want to put him in a position to really succeed.
Hey, he was a pretty good bag grabber though. So yeah, you know, if that doesn't work out, I think he's got a good spot there too.
Absolutely.
Exactly. We got the rubber gloves. Absolutely.
All right, so finally, so you're kind of you're well known that you're a Clemson graduate. We heard you have a decent football team.
Yes.
I mean, if you guys make the playoffs, okay, we guys, a stunning loss the other week.
Boom.
Okay, I'm a Buckeye honk, okay? So I want to know, would you be willing to make it interesting if we happen to play each other in the playoffs?
Oh man, I hate these questions because I'm not a gambler.
We can discuss terms later, but
we can discuss terms. Yeah, we can certainly talk about it. Okay. I think that it'd be fun. You know, the odds are not in my favor.
Yeah, I'm gonna take both you guys on with Notre Dame right now.
Because right now we're 3-0 against Ohio State. So eventually we're going to lose to Ohio State. So the odds are not in our favor.
And you know what? The weird part is I don't even think this is Ohio State's best team. I think they have their best quarterback they've ever had, but I think they're weaker. I think wide receiver they're strong, but everywhere else they're lacking. They don't have that strong pass rush like they have. They're solid across the board, but they don't have like standout players. So it'll be interesting.
Clemson just needs to stop getting hurt.
Yeah, and sick. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Hurt and sick. Yeah, I'm just excited to get back to the ACC championship. I want to see Trevor Lawrence and a healthy Clemson team go against Notre Dame. And if we lose again, well, then I know with that Notre Dame's just the better team.
There you go.
So that's what I'm hoping for. I want the rematch. I'm ready for it.
I can't wait for that either because I like Notre Dame a little more than Ohio State. Love them both, but
well, hey, thank you very much for joining us. We had a great time. I think it was long overdue, right? I mean, it seemed like you were on everything else, and like we just hadn't had you on yet. So like it was time that we had you on. And I know you're a busy guy, so we do appreciate you taking the time and joining us. And we had a good time.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. It was a good time.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it, brother.
See ya.